We know there are times where you're just too busy to sort through the mass of information that comes your way. So to make it easier for you to stay informed, subscribe to The Morning Agenda, WITF's news podcast, where the only agenda is you.
Funding for The Spark is provided by Capital Blue Cross, focused on creating a healthier future for our communities through innovations like its Capital Blue Cross Connect Health and Wellness Centers, which provide in-person services and inspire healthy living. Learn more at capitalbluecross.com. The Spark is also supported by UPMC. Choose UPMC for your family's health care needs close to home. Visit upmc.com/centralPA for a complete list of services and locations.
We live in a politically polarized country. Depending on where Americans stand on issues, people on the other side are often viewed as the enemy, and sometimes in visceral terms. Those feelings can be driven by emotions. The two leading contenders for president, incumbent President Joe Biden and former President Donald Trump, certainly evoke emotions. Almost every day, there's a poll that shows which candidate voters support, or less frequently, support or opposition to specific issues. But what about the emotional responses to the candidates from voters? Franklin and Marshall College's February poll asked questions about how Pennsylvania voters would feel if Biden or Trump were elected. To tell us more about the results is Burwood Yost, director of the Floyd Institute for Public Policy at the Center for Opinion Research at Franklin and Marshall College. Burwood Yost, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks, Scott. Good to be here.
All right, so I'm going to start with a term you use in the poll, and where I shouldn't say in the poll, but writing about the poll, that I need you to define. What are effective forecasts?
The easiest way to say it is that they're simply our predictions about our emotional responses to future events. That's an effective forecast. So how would you feel if you were fired from your job? How would you feel if you broke up with a spouse? How would you feel if you were on the Spark today? You can try to predict your emotions to some future event, and that's all effective forecasting is.
So other than emotions, how do voters decide who they're going to vote for?
Well, Scott, as you hinted at your opening, we see the kinds of things that people believe are important mentioned all the time in polling. Polls gather data about partisanship. They gather data about ideology. They talk about what issues are important. So all this conversation about the economy or how people think about immigration reform and those kinds of things. Even how which candidate could do better on different issues is something that is constantly tracked, in addition to demographic attitudes. So we think that there are a bunch of different things that are important to understand about what might drive a voter to make a choice, starting with partisanship and ideology, but moving through issues and those kinds of things. But we rarely ask, how would you feel if this event happened? And so we thought, hey, we've got all our bases covered. We still ask all of these issue and partisan and ideological questions, but why not add a few effective forecasting questions just to see how voters might respond? And in my mind, I wanted to start asking these questions because this particular election, we know that emotions are going to be important. We know how many people don't really feel that strongly in terms of their favorable attitudes about the candidates. Many people wish there were other candidates. So I would think that some of these emotional questions are going to play into that final choice, particularly for people who are sort of not sure what they're going to do. And that was really the impetus behind this.
Do negative emotions play a bigger role or are a bigger driver toward who someone is going to vote for rather than positive feelings?
I think a lot of people would agree with that premise. I'm not sure. It depends, I think, on the size of the number of people who have those feelings. So, for instance, in 2020, when we asked people about whether they were voting for President Trump or for President Biden or against his opponent, most of Trump's voters said they were voting for him. Most of Biden's voters said they were voting against Trump. And that was a pretty close election. So it really, I think, depends on what emotions you're driving and who feels more strongly about those, either positively or negatively. I guess in 2020, we might say that the negative attitudes toward Trump probably led to his defeat. Mm.
And you're going to have some results in a few minutes that I don't know if they'll forecast who's going to win, but still some things that the candidates have to overcome. This is kind of a rhetorical question, Burwood, but do emotions play a bigger role when there is so much polarization?
Well, you could argue that polarization is driven by these emotional feelings, right? The political scientists, talk about negative ideology and negative partisanship, which basically means we have strong negative feelings about the other party. You mentioned that at the beginning. And so, I don't think there's any question that the emotions play a large role in our politics. And I think we don't talk about them a lot. And maybe we should talk about them more, particularly as people become more and more polarized.
You know, it almost sounds, there may be some people who maybe they haven't listened to the program or they read about it ahead of time and said, they're going to talk about emotions of voters. Have we become a nation of emotions? But as you point out, so many people are driven by what is a major decision in their lives by how they feel.
Yeah, look, I'm not a psychologist. I'm a psychologist. I'm a political scientist. But, we've studied this stuff before. Psychologists actually are very interested in how accurate these effective forecasts are. But we won't talk about that. But in previous surveys, we have asked how people would feel about a Trump or a Clinton election, that kind of thing. And I just think the more sometimes overvalue the rational and discount the emotional in our politics. And all you got to do is look around and realize how much emotion is invested in these things. And I think the problem with emotions as a predictor is they're not all that explanatory. Like, why does someone hold the emotions they have? Whereas, it's easier to say, hey, Republicans vote for Republicans, conservatives vote for Republicans, liberals vote for Democrats, right? I mean, those are nice explanatory things where you have to sort of unpack the emotions. And that's probably why we rely on them less. But I think we discounted the value of emotions in 2016. A lot of people have written about that race, have talked about how kind of sterile Hillary Clinton's campaign was and how much emotion Donald Trump generated, particularly among his supporters, and he won that race. So I think it's worth exploring, and it's another bit of data that might help us figure out where are, say, the moderate, less partisan voters going to go? Where are the people who don't like either candidate? Maybe where will they go because of these kinds of things? And so we view it as another helpful piece of the puzzle.
All right, so let's talk about the results. There's basically three charts that you have. In your poll, you ask about emotional responses to a Biden or Trump victory. Now, explain how you measured the emotional responses.
Yeah, we basically ask people, would they be very worried or very hopeful? Would they be worried or hopeful? Would they be sad or happy? Would they be agitated or calm if Biden or Trump won? And we randomly assigned whether we asked about Biden or Trump. And then we put that on a scale. And so what we're reporting here, what we're talking about today, Scott, are just the people who answered in the most extreme category. So the people who are very worried or very hopeful, very sad or very happy. So that's what we are doing in terms of the measurement here. And I think one of the things that it's fascinating when you look at the numbers, how consistent the responses are among Mr. Trump's supporters, if you're looking at all voters, right? About a third of voters consistently say they'd be very hopeful, very happy, very calm if he were to win. So about a third of voters express positive emotions about his victory. But he also pretty solidly outpaces President Biden in the number of strong negative responses he generates among all voters. So there's a lot more voters who have an extreme emotional response, as we've measured it, to President Trump than President Biden. I don't think that's a surprise, but that's what we certainly see. So then we wanted to say, okay, that's all voters. Are there some groups of voters that are worth looking at more closely? And one group that we think is important for this election will be moderate voters, people who do not identify as ideological conservatives or ideological liberals. And here we see a very different picture. Again, if you look, President Biden has a much larger share of positive forecasts. So a lot more people said they'd be very hopeful, very happy, or very calm if he were elected compared to President Trump. Now, again, just speaking about moderates, who only about 15% consistently said they'd be very hopeful, happy, or calm. And then on the other side, again, we see this large negative emotional response to Trump, former President Trump, among moderate voters. It's a much smaller. And in fact, when you look at President Biden's numbers, I mean, the positive emotions outweigh the negative in just about every circumstance.
When you're talking about moderate voters, are those independents or are those moderates registered with one of the parties?
They can be both. There's a large number of independents in there, but there's also, you know, some Republicans and some Democrats. But I think the last time I looked, maybe three quarters of people who identify as moderates are either registered as Democrats or registered as independents. Mm.
Will those independents, you know, we've heard this often during this campaign, and you could have said it in almost any presidential campaign, but will those independents decide the election?
Well, certainly the moderate voters will, and that includes some independents. They tend to vote a little less. But again, this is a really interesting election cycle because we don't know yet what the ballot's going to look like. I think one of the most important things to keep in mind about the November election is how many candidates are running for president and in which parties are they running? So, you know, three candidates, Biden, Trump, and say Jill Stein, would be different than Biden, Trump, Jill Stein, and Robert Kennedy Jr., right? The way that the ballot is constituted is going to make a difference. And I suspect if we talk about voters who have an unfavorable opinion of both candidates, for instance, maybe those folks will vote for a third party because they have such negative feelings about both candidates.
I want to talk, there was a third category, Burwood, that you had, and that was a disapprover. Define a disapprover.
So the disapprover would be somebody who has an unfavorable opinion of both Donald Trump and Joe Biden. And that represents about 20% of the electorate, about one in five voters. So we wanted to look, I mean, part of the reason for asking these questions was to figure out what's going on with that group of people who are going to have to make a choice, but aren't wild about either candidate. So among that group, you can see that there are very, very few positive, extreme positive responses. But as you might suspect, that the negative, strong negative emotional responses, there's far more people who express that for former President Trump than President Biden. So far more people said they'd be very worried, very sad, and very agitated than if Mr. Trump were to win, than Mr. Biden were to win.
So in these three categories of voters, President Trump, former President Trump, comes out, has many more negatives, or much more in the negative side than President Trump. But yet, poll after poll, both candidates are neck and neck. And I don't know if I'd say most, you probably follow this more than I do, that President Trump, former President Trump, has a slight lead on President Biden. So, I mean, it doesn't kind of mesh with the emotions here.
Well, it does.
It does. Okay.
Let me tell you how. I was going to circle us back to this because it's an important thing to remember. Most polls are showing this as in Pennsylvania at least, as a very close race. This particular poll showed Biden and Trump basically tied. The advantage that former President Trump has is among the most ideological voters, right? So if you look at conservative voters, right, 70% of conservatives say they would be very happy, very hopeful, very calm if Mr. Trump won in November. So his base is really positive and happy and excited about his candidacy. You can't say the same for Joe Biden among liberals. And this is his real problem, I think. Only about half said they'd be very calm if he won. Fewer than half said they would be very happy if he won. And only one in four, now this is liberals, only one in four liberals said they are very hopeful should Biden win. And this, in a nutshell, emphasizes Mr. Biden's weakness with his base and Mr. Trump's strength with his, which is why the races are so close at the moment. The base of both parties feel very differently about their candidates.
Do emotions drive turnout?
I think so. I think emotions, they're going to drive our choices, right? I mean, if you get into the psychology literature, there are people who believe that these emotional forecasts are the way that we think about our lives. It's like we use these forecasts to plan our futures. What will make us happy? What do we want to avoid? And there's definitely in the psychological literature this notion of loss aversion, that we respond to negative emotions more than positive ones. And so I think that that's the case in this circumstance as well.
Two issues that dogged Biden, his age and inflation. Those would seem to be issues that elicit an emotional response. That's not a good sign for Biden.
No, it's not. I think the age issue has been a big issue for the president, right? Even more than inflation. I mean, we know inflation's a problem and people are blaming him for that. But we also hear lots and lots of voters telling us that age is a reason that they're not supporting him or they think he's too old, even among people who voted for him before, if some polls are to be believed. My read of all of this is that part of the reason that his base has slipped is that he hasn't given him reason to be very happy or very excited or very hopeful about the future. And the case I make at the end of this analysis is that he's got to find a way to emotionally connect with his base, especially. And I'm not sure whether concerns about his age would be altered by making a stronger connection. But, you know, I think he really needs to go beyond just talking about policy successes and proposals. You know, he needs to start talking about his vision for the future. That's the only way I think you generate those positive emotional responses that lead people to say, hey, he's not just thinking about the past, he's thinking about the future.
What's ironic about that is that Trump rarely talks about the future.
Yeah, well, his base is a little different, right? And he talks about, well, he does, though, in some way talk about the future. He talks about the future by reflecting on the past. He wants our future to look very much like our past. So that is a vision for the future. You may not agree with it, but that's how some people would feel strongly about that. Hmm.
Trump being a threat to democracy doesn't seem to be as emotional, again, as that's bad news for Biden. We only have about 30 seconds left, Berman.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think at this point there are a lot of voters who aren't paying attention. And I think as the campaigns develop their messaging and target the audiences they need to target, we'll see some of these things change.
Burwood Yost, director of the Floyd Institute for Public Policy at the Center for Opinion Research at Franklin and Marshall College. Thank you very much for being with us today, Burwood.
Hey, thanks, Scott. Always great to talk to you.